Our first guest today, she is an author, a music lover, publicist, one-time radio groupie, maybe?
Yeah.
You can qualify
actually,
that later.
One time for many, many years.
I got it right then, good.
Many times, actually.
Took some liberties with that. Debbie Kruger stopped playing classical piano in fourth grade. However, by 1973, she was turned on to pop music through her KTEL compilation album, and on it specifically, Sherbet's Cassandra did it for her. Debbie has now written a book exploring Australian music called Songwriters Speak. Debbie Kruger, thanks for coming in.
Thank you, Nick, and I'm so happy to be a part of your nation. I actually was already turned on to pop music, but that was kind of a seminal song for me, Cassandra on Rock Explosion. But when I was 10 years old, I actually wanted to sing Tie a Yellow Ribbon Round the Old Oak Tree on Young Talent Time. That was my greatest aspiration.
Not a bad song.
Not an Australian song. It was a big hit in 1973, and I'm still fond of it to this day.
Can you sing?
Yeah.
Well?
Not bad. I sang at that Don't Give Up Your Day Job thing a few years ago and did quite a fine job of You're No Good, Linda Ronstadt song. Yes.
So why did you decide to give up the piano all those years ago and not pursue a musical career?
I wasn't very good at it. I actually don't think that I'm musically inclined. I can sing and I can harmonise because I've spent a lifetime listening to other people's songs and I need to participate in those songs. And I think anyone can sing if they really want to. You just have to keep going with it.
Mm.
But actually playing music, I just don't think I have the gift, and I do think it's a gift.
Yeah.
I think everyone has a gift, and then it's up to them whether they actually work at that gift, and that's how I am with writing. But that's certainly the songwriters that I spoke to for my book have a gift, and it's just up to them as to how much they actually apply that and apply hard work to that gift to create the magic that is the songs that we love.
Let's talk about your tome. It's 608 pages.
Including two very comprehensive indexes or indices.
Indices.
We have a title index, so that if there's a particular song and you just want to know the story behind that song, just go straight to the song title index. And
Wow. Then
there's a full-on index, which I really wanted in the book because so many songwriters are influenced by, for example, Bob Dylan. So look up Dylan, Bob, and see just how many references there are to him.
Mm.
I find that kind of stuff fascinating.
Let me guess, Paul Kelly would be one?
Paul Kelly gets mentioned by just about every other songwriter in the book.
He does, doesn't he?
He seems to be something of a benchmark, an example. Oh, well, Paul Kelly can write a song in 10 minutes. It takes me 3 years. That kind of comment came up now and then.
Ivor Davies, who was in here yesterday, said the same. He mentioned Paul Kelly.
He did. Well, Ivor, you couldn't find two different songwriters in the way they actually go through the mechanical process of writing a song than Paul Kelly, the quintessential organic sit down with an acoustic guitar kind of songwriter, and Ivor Davies, who will discover some weird computerized sound and loop it up and listen to it while he's vacuum cleaning for maybe 3 hours until he suddenly hears a melody come out of it.
Mm.
And next thing you've got Great Southern Land or something fabulous like that. So I love the fact that they were all able in some way, shape or form to articulate their own unique process and share that with me.
One of the great things about your book is that you have covered such a broad gamut of people, including Joy McKean, of course, the late Slim Dusty's wife, Ross Wilson, Ivor Davies. So it's rock, it's pop, it's acoustic, it's country. Are there people that, now that you've written it, you've thought, oh, whoops, didn't put them in?
Oh, there were people that I wanted in there that I couldn't get.
Right.
A few.
Was John Williamson one of those people?
He's in the book.
He is in the book.
Yeah.
Oh, sorry.
Yeah.
Bennett, and oversight.
No, that's okay. There's 45 songwriters in the book.
Right.
If you haven't got to John yet, that's perfectly understandable. But I hope you do get to his chapter because that was one of the more revealing experiences for me in putting the book together and doing the research that, okay, some of us like John's voice and some of us aren't that fond of it, but his lyrics are absolutely incredible. He writes some of the most beautiful poetry about Australia that you will ever, ever read or hear. And I urge anyone who thinks they couldn't possibly be a John Williamson fan to listen to Cootamundra Wattle or Galleries of Pink Galahs or some of his funny songs.
Mm.
There's one about a budgie, you know, or a vasectomy song. Listen to these songs. John is a very witty and literate and poetic writer, and I actually found it extremely rewarding to listen to his work.
Yeah, I remember a special time once I did a story on him, and it was in Alice Springs or outside of Alice, and we went out to a dry creek bed to do the interview, and while we were setting up, getting ready for the interview, he started singing to the birds in the trees. It was incredible. He found music with the birds, and he was harmonising with the birds. We're with Debbie Kruger, an author of a great book, Do you prefer author or authoress?
The authoress, that sounds like Brontosaurus.
It does. Sounds a little...
I am an author.
An author.
A published author.
Now, there are a whole bunch of people that we talked about while Sharon O'Neill was singing for us that you tried to get, but for various reasons couldn't do.
Just a few.
Yeah?
Just a few.
But you're mostly satisfied with whom you got?
Oh, I think that the 45 songwriters in this book are essential.
Yeah.
When you're telling the story of Australian music through the songwriting. But, you know, there are many, many more that deserve to have their stories told. It's just a matter of, you know, they couldn't all fit in this book. And there could be other volumes to follow. There could be expanded editions to follow. Who knows?
CD's pretty tasty, isn't it? Whose idea was that?
It was mine in conjunction with Festival Mushroom, and they gave me creative control. I chose the tracks and I put the liners together. And the point of it was to not make it just another CD compilation of greatest hits. Oh, yeah. There's Eagle Rock again. There's Kay San again. Mm. It was about choosing tracks from each songwriter that really represented them in the way that they had talked in the interview. So with Ross Wilson, he actually said that his favourite song of his was Cool World.
Yeah, I like that one. Mondo Rock Days.
Yeah, because that marked a turning point for him in his writing, where he started writing about personal issues and about human emotions rather than flippant, you know, let's jive, let's dance, let's do the Eagle Rock, come back again, I'm crazy about you, babe, kind of
Your
thing.
Your world is as cold as ice. That's
you're going to keep singing.
I'd like to, but I think I might muff up the lyrics.
You can sing, all right? The world is so nice.
Thank you.
But I don't want you around.
Okay. Cheerio.
I still want you around. I think I still want you around. See, yeah. I can't tell you the whole lyric either.
But you hit a bit of a groove there, didn't you, with that song? You're right. Whereas Daddy Cool was kind of jangly, fun, boogie music.
Well, he'd formed Mondo Rock as a songwriting band, and he'd asked in Eric McCusker.
Yeah.
And Eric's prolific songwriting abilities kind of raised the bar for Ross, he admits, and made him feel that he had to write even more. It was, you know, during that period that he also recorded, I think, Touch of Paradise, which later on John Farnham recorded on the Whispering Jack album. So, and We're No Angels, those songs sort of came out of that period. So, yes, the CD, you know, everything on there from Rolf Harris to Nick Cave, Silverchair to Casey Chambers.
What's Nick Cave really like?
Oh, lovely.
Is he?
Nick and I, we're like that. She says, fingers, you know, finger crossed at the microphone. We're mates. I'm on his email address list. No, Nick was great. That was, like I said before, John Williamson was quite a revealing experience because I might have had some preconceived notions about, you know, his work. Mm. Nick also, I admitted quite up front with Nick that I hadn't, you know, spent 20 years falling at his feet being a big Nick Cave fan, and I didn't know all the lyrics and I didn't know all the stories, and I wasn't particularly interested in talking about heroin addiction and PJ Harvey and all the stuff that's been talked about ad nauseum. But I'd sat down and I'd listened to 15 albums in chronological order and studied his work and read his biography and taken a very studious approach, and came to him with this huge stack of like 6 pages of questions, thinking I'd get, you know, I'd be lucky to get an hour with him. And I had 3 hours with him, just the two of us, nobody else there. The PA kept ringing going, she's still there. Why is she still there?
And he'd go, what are you doing in there?
And he'd go, it's all right, darling, I'll call you later. It's all right, darling, I'll call you later. And he was just, I found him very erudite, very amusing. Mm. When I listened back on the recording to transcribe it later, I laughed a lot while I was listening. We'd actually had fun. And I think he really appreciated where I was coming from with this project. He very much wanted to be a part of it, and had in fact read the book that inspired my book, because there was actually an American book that inspired my book and was the template for my book, called Songwriters on Songwriting by a man named Paul Zollo, where he interviews a lot of great American songwriters, including, you know, Pete Seeger and Paul Simon, Burt Bacharach and Hal David, etc. Nick was very familiar with that and very supportive of this, and we've stayed in touch, and he's a good bloke.
Debbie Kruger is an author and she's with us. Now, Debbie, was there a time, maybe some artists that you interviewed, that you were just a huge fan of when you were younger, and then when you got to meet them, perhaps your expectations weren't met? Or because there is a saying I've seen it, someone has written this before, that you shouldn't meet your idols because you'll be horribly disappointed. Is that true?
No, not for me. I mean, there have been instances, not with Australians. Like I had a Don Henley experience once that was bitterly disappointing, but I made it my mission to sort that out in subsequent meetings so that I always had some kind of fond memory. And my most recent, actually, encounter with Don was joyous. So I sorted that out. No, it's very important for me that I get to meet my idols, number one, and that I like them. So I had actually I am unashamedly a Sherbet fan. I was a Sherbet fan through the 70s. We talked about Cassandra before. And, I used to sit on my friend Peter Dixon's shoulders at the 2SM free concerts and scream my little heart out at Sherbet concerts. But I never met them then. I didn't meet them until the early 80s when they were on a farewell tour, and I got to meet them a lot and actually got up and sang and played tambourine with them, which is a whole other story. By the time I sat down with Garth Porter, I knew him quite well. But the wonderful thing about spending, I think with Garth it was between 4 and 5 hours because we did it over 2 days, to talk about his life in songwriting was great. It was another step into the friendship. The guys from Little River Band, also a huge fan of them, and both Graham Goble and Glenn Shorrock I'd gotten to know through my professional life for some years before I sat down to talk to them about their songwriting. And then others, I was really thrilled to meet Todd Hunter when I interviewed Todd and his wife Joanna Piggott, whose most famous song is Age of Reason for John Farnham, but who also wrote some of the big 80s hits for Dragon like Rain and Speak No Evil and Cry and that sort of thing.
She-bop? Didn't she do She-bop?
She-bop?
Not She-bop, not Cyndi Lauper's one. She's a bop girl.
No, didn't Ross Wilson write that for his wife, Pat?
Oh, that's right.
Yeah.
Thank you.
Yeah, no, Joanna...
We're back to Ross again because I want to play Ross Wilson's song. Can we do that?
Yeah, can I just finish quickly talking about Todd?
Of course you can.
So I'd always been a big Dragon fan.
Yeah.
And I wasn't, Todd and Joanna are the most down-to-earth people you can meet. They live down in the country. They, walk around in R.M. Williams and big parkas, and they're very unpretentious. But I did enjoy the conversation so much because Todd spoke so openly about his relationship with Mark. Who did you know that Mark Hunter sang the original vocal on the original demo of Age of Reason?
Wow.
I have that in my bag.
Do you?
Yeah, I do.
Is it on CD?
Yeah. Play a track.
Debbie, back to your comments about who would have liked to have got for the book had they have not left us.
Well, yeah, I mean, one of the main triggers for doing the book was, in fact, when Ted Mulready passed away in 2001. And I just thought, oh, darn.
Mm.
Did anyone ever talk to him about his songwriting? Because we all thought of him as this larrikin lead singer of TMG, but he was a really fine songwriter. And then I thought, oh, gee, I wish I'd interviewed Peter Allen. And, wow, it's great that I've interviewed Andrew Farris because I'd already interviewed him for APRAP, the APRA Members Journal. But, gee, I wish I'd gotten Michael Hutchence as well. And Paul Hewson and Mark Hunter from Dragon. I mean, Paul Hewson wrote April Sun in Cuba. Oh, what a song. And the great Mark Hunter. What a mind. What a crazy guy. So, That was definitely part of the impetus for doing the book was just, let's do this before we lose any more. And unfortunately, Slim did pass away. I had planned to interview Joy McKinnon and Slim Dusty together about their lives in songwriting together and separately. But fortunately, Joy is so used to talking about Slim. She wrote his autobiography for him. She talks more about him than she ever talks about herself. So when I did sit down with Joy a few months after Slim's death, she was able to give me a very full picture of not only her own career and songwriting talents, but how Slim wrote songs and what he thought about the songs he'd written and what he thought about songs that other people had written for him.
Mm.
Yeah, but that's also why the book has a lot of the more long-term established songwriters and is lighter on the more contemporary songwriters.
Like your Daniel from Silverchair,
I've got Daniel
for example.
Johns because the guy's a genius and we've already seen more in his short time he's been doing it for 10 years now, but we've seen more in that time than we will see from a lot of songwriters in 40 or 50 years. And it's just, the mind boggles as to what Daniel Johns will come up with in the next 10 years. Casey Chambers, I believe, she's already created classics and she's already left that imprint in the cultural landscape that I was looking for here. And Darren Hayes and Daniel Jones from Savage Garden, what great songwriters.
Yeah.
Where did that gift come from, In a bedroom in Logan City,
yes,
south of Brisbane.
Exactly.
They wrote truly, madly, deeply. I mean, golly, you know. So But no, I really wanted to talk to the older people, the people who'd been around for decades, whose work had endured and become classic. And I, not that they're all unhealthy by any means, but I didn't want anyone to cark it, anyone else to cark it before I got to talk to them. So, yeah.
What I like about you, Debbie, you just tell it how it is. That's great.
That's right.
It's a great trait. Now, you've brought in this exceptional demo. Four tracks, original demo recording. So let's set the picture right for the people at home. I'm going to play track three, which was a massive hit for Olivia Newton-John, Hopelessly Devoted to You, written by John Farrar.
Written by the great John Farrar, one of the great unsung heroes of Australian and international music, and very important to have him in the book because he wrote, "Oh, You're the One That I Want" and "Hopelessly Devoted to You" from Greece. But all Olivia's big hits, going back to "Have You Never Been Mellow" and through to "Magic," and as I was meeting the songwriters, they quite happily played me demos, you know, when they'd originally written the song and put it down on some dinky little tape. I mean, the more recent the songwriter, the more sophisticated the demo. And they very kindly gave me copies for my own personal use and to share with you and your listeners today. So this is John Farrar in his fabulous falsetto. He was in the Melbourne group The Strangers, which were known for their Beach Boys-style harmony singing and falsetto. And this was his little demo that he gave the producers of Greece when he pitched Hopelessly Devoted to You.
And this is so special because normally these don't leave the house of the songwriter. Isn't that brilliant? Actually, absolute simplicity and brilliance at its best.
I've been doing so many interviews for the book lately with a lot of regional newspaper press, and then it goes to print and they get a lot of what I said wrong. Mm. And so I'm writing a song myself now called Hopelessly Misquoted by You.
That's great. Debbie, all the best with the book. It is such a great collection. Look, whether you're a music lover or not, it's just a great read.
There's a website. Can we tell your listeners about the book is Songwriters Speak. There's a website, www.songwriterspeak.com. Lots of information there. Lots of really interesting photos of me with the different songwriters. There's a making of page, which is quite fascinating for fans.
You hanging out with Rolf on the Thames.
Yeah, me and Rolf. Me and Todd and Joanna, speaking of whom.
Yeah, we're going to play this one now. Now, this is special. Tell me the story of this song and how it came about to being where it is now with John Farnham.
Todd Hunter and Joanna Piggott spent a long time writing the song Age of Reason in the hope that John Farnham would sing it. And it was actually inspired, Joanna said, by the birth of their first child. So, you know, very much a song about hope for the future. But when it came to time to put down a demo to send over to Ross Fraser, John's producer, they got Mark Hunter to do the vocal on it. And Mark found the range in the song, because it was written for Farnham's voice, so strenuous that he gave up after two verses and refused to sing the third verse, so they had to get a female singer in to do that third verse. But when they played this for me in their studio, and this is a couple of years now, the hairs on the back of my neck just stood to attention. It was like a voice from the grave, and I felt very honoured, and we're all very privileged to be able to hear this.
Debbie Kruger, thank you.
Nick, thank you so much for having me in your nation.
My pleasure.